You are now listening to the Reminder Remedy Podcast with Alina Conley, reminding you that everything you need is everything you got to flourish exactly where you are. We believe the world needs happier women, so we provide tools, tips, and life hacks based on the research of positive psychology. This helps you rediscover your strengths while increasing your overall happiness and productivity so that you can take action today. When women flourish, everybody wins. Let's get into today's episode. Have you heard the news? The Reminder Remedy is now on YouTube. That's right, guys. I have my very own channel. It's called Life Crafting with Alina. So if you're really inspired by my own journey and productivity and personal development, you're going to love this channel because not only do I bring my podcast interviews, but I'm going to be doing product reviews with some of the things that I'm using to help with my brain health, some of my skincare habits, some of the new routines that I'm doing, such as mindfulness and breathing. This is really going to give you a behind the scenes look at what it looks like in the life of someone who is high performing, or at least trying to be high performing. Y'all, I'm not gonna make it seem like I'm perfect, but you're gonna get to really get behind the scenes on all of my personal development hacks, tips, and tools. So I look forward to seeing you. But enough about me, let's talk about you. Have you booked your free session? That's right, we've opened up our books again for 30-minute productivity coaching sessions. The first one is on us. So head over to thereminderremedy.com/coaching to book your free session today. Right. Okay, everyone. So I am super excited to be back for yet another episode of the Reminder Remedy. Per usual, you all are in for a treat. I think it's been a while since we've actually had a visitor come on here. And so today I'm excited to introduce to you all Dr. Gertrude Lyons, and she is going to really give us a full picture of all of the things that we experience as mothers, as we're mothering ourselves, our children, really thinking about what it means in terms of modern day motherhood. Especially since we know that women more than anyone have been affected, specifically moms, by 2020 and the pandemic and working and balancing all of the things. So super warm welcome. So glad to have you.
Thank you so much, Alina. I feel excited, honored, privileged to have this time with you.
Wonderful. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I know that you've been coaching for a while, but I would love to just kind of hear how you're looking to impact the world.
Great. Yeah, thank you. Well, one person at a time, right? Like with coaching, sometimes that's in a group as you do. And similarly, wanting to touch people, you know, through coaching and all of that. So yes, 20 years of coaching, I have, you know, a significant amount of training in all those areas and a 2 master's degree and a doctorate in transformational leadership and coaching, where I focused on mothering as a vehicle for transformation, you know, as something. And to me, that equates to the how we take care of ourselves is that journey that we can consciously embark on that puts us, you know, right in the mix of everything, you know, and learning and growing with our children. So impacting the world, I think, you know, as women, as we get empowered with this kind of come from versus 100% self-sacrifice, or, you know, some of the paradigms that are currently in our culture around mothering that really restrict us and disempower us. I think if we're empowered as women and mothers, and we all see that aspect of ourselves, that a lot of what isn't working, and as we have been seeing so clearly, as you said, in 2020, that that is a piece of the puzzle that I think could make a significant impact.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one of the things that's it's very interesting to me about this whole motherhood thing is that it really is this mysterious thing. It's like this secret society where before we become mothers, we don't really know much about it, right? So it's one of those things where you kind of know, okay, you got to take care of the kid, learn how to change a diaper, maybe breastfeed, but it's really a mystery. And when it comes to talking about motherhood, is the balance between saying too much, where you scare people who are not moms yet, right? So we know that there are things that are not so pretty or feel so natural, whether it's through labor and delivery or the fourth trimester, or, you know, just trying to raise normal kids, for a lack of a better term, right? You don't want to talk too negatively about it, but you also want to be able to be very authentic in sharing your own journey, right? Which may not be as pretty as some of the books may paint. And so just in your experience, what do you feel like is a great way to have the conversation around motherhood so that we can support women who are looking to go on the journey without scaring them or being too overwhelming, but also supporting new moms or moms who are struggling and want to kind of prepare those who are not there yet along this journey?
Well, it's such a great question, Alina. And I think it's so important, you know, kind of that approach, like, how do we, you know, really put the reality out there and not overwhelm, you know, women? And one of the ways I've been, a perspective I've been trying to give or have women start thinking about or looking at is part of rewriting the mother code is looking that as women, we mother, right? And that all women mother, and we may choose to mother children. We may choose also to mother our career and or, right, careers, relationships, our dreams. So I say that because I think if we can also start us all seeing ourselves on one team, you know, living this mother journey in a lot of different ways, right? So when I start from that come from, then women who are thinking about or not sure or know that they want to have children, you know, we can kind of look at it more from a, I don't know, like a higher up view, like looking down on it, right? So that then we can say things like, well, starting a business, you know, a relationship, all of those are very stressful situations. How can we learn to deal with stress, you know, and deal with chaotic situations, you know, disequilibrium, and start engaging in that inquiry and that possibility, you know, I think there's ways that your coaching ties to that for women. And then when we had children, you know, we're already in that conversation, and then we can say like, okay, so, you know, there's these arenas and then this one has its own whole landscape. Right. And, you know, I think sometimes by building trust in a relationship or, you know, kind of having made some headway, you know, leading into that conversation can make a big difference, because then it's like, I don't want to, you know, we don't want to like kind of give this, you know, give you a false sense of what the whole landscape is in mothering. Cause there's times it's super hard. It's messy. It's like nothing you've done before. So no matter how much we talk about it till you experience it, you won't know it. But let's look at some ways you can prepare for those challenging times, you know, and for the disruption, and then not just prepare for them so we can get through them, but then how can I grow from them, you know, and, you know, kind of see it that even all those really hard times are going to have a huge benefit for you if we're mindful about it. Mm-hmm. So I know I said like a few things.
I think that that's really helpful. I love, sometimes it does feel like there are almost like two different clubs in the, you know, the group. It's like, oh, yeah. You have kids or you don't, you know, the people who have don't get invites here, or we don't expect you to be able to do this. Or, you know, if you don't have children, it's like, oh, well, I automatically think that they don't possess these skills or they don't understand me. And I have definitely experienced that personally, because I was really one of the first of my colleagues to start having children. And so, you know, even though they never purposely pushed me away, I think that I was very much in this space where I felt I wasn't understood, right? I didn't feel like people could really relate to what I was going through. But I think that equally, one of the things that my friends shared, and we actually had a podcast episode where we talked about this, was that being a friend or an aunt or a godmother of someone who is raising children is also a role that they grow into and that they want to be able to support and know what's needed. And so, you know, kind of trying not to isolate oneself, but really building and evolving those relationships seems to be something that's good for both sides and just women in general. So I think that I love that concept of just kind of all having one team. So in your experience.
Yeah, then how can we interact and empower each other? Sorry, I love hearing that you guys had that conversation. And, you know, we're uplifting all of the different roles because, mm-hmm. you know, we've gotten so separated into our current culture that it's not easy to do that. So we have to do it much more proactively and, you know, with way more awareness of how important all, you know, when we say like, it takes a village, you know, to raise a child or ourselves, it really is true, but we have to put that village together. You know,
right.
And I think that's
a great point, because I'm constantly kind of ranting about the fact that the village just doesn't really exist in the old way. Right. So I think that for many of us post-industrial revolution, you know, we have gone away from the village to start careers, college. And so there are many women, modern women, who did choose their careers and these different paths where maybe their families are not in the cities that they're starting their own families in. And it's now proven to really be a challenge, right? Because we know it takes that additional support. So do you have any advice to women who are maybe getting started in this space and they don't have like their mom or their aunts or kind of that, mm-hmm. that close-knit circle in the same city with them?
Yeah, I think that's really important, Alina, because, you know, which I guess advice-wise would be if, you know, you know that kind of in the upcoming, I want to have children and, you know, that's going to be a space for me is to start, you know, building that community, you know, and then my daughters have, you know, aunts, family members by, you know, by choice, you know, like family mm-hmm. by, you know, yes, because all of my family and my husband's family are not in the Chicago, where I'm in Chicago and they're not here, you know, they're, you know, not an easy distance away. So I realize that I'm going to need to create that community. So, you know, and it's being aware, like what do they provide? You know, what do I think I'll be missing? And, you know, who are the types of people around me and how do I start surrounding myself with some of those people, you know, and some maybe if you're like really close to that, you know, kind of look in those arenas, like, you know, people particularly in the child centric arena, but more so, I think it's, you know, what, cause I'll want that for myself, right? It's, you know, building a support, a friend network of allies, like people that I can really trust to like, tell me the truth, you know, really kind of like be in the mess of it with me you know, provide the kind of support that may not come from just like acquaintances or, you know, friends. Mm-hmm. I make sometimes a distinction between friends and allies, you know, cause friends are, you know, it can be there for like a good time and game night or something. But when it comes down to allies, it's like, you know, they're the ones that'll, you know, kind of step in when they see or, you know, struggling, or, mm-hmm. you know, that when you ask them a question, they tell you the truth versus mm-hmm. what they think you want to hear and that kind of thing. So really kind of evaluating and then consciously like setting out to gather that tribe, you know, mm-hmm. the those people that resonate with you, and not just resonate because they're comfortable, but resonate because they'll, like I said, you know, really be there for you, with you emotionally and in the different ways. I might have my spiritual connection. I might have my, you know, work pod. You know, they can be kind of separate, but, you know, all put together, you know, they mm-hmm. provide a great team.
Mm-hmm. I love that concept of allyship. I've never really thought about that, but I think it is so true. It's like, you know, you really need certain people, and sometimes even friends can't be that. They're not capable of being that. But I do find that when you start to identify like these needs or these certain values that you have for yourself or your family, when you realize that you need an ally in these areas, it can feel challenging to go out and kind of put together this tribe. So if you mm-hmm. had to kind of think about your own experience of making adult friendships, which is something that we talk yeah. about on this show regularly, and, you know, really just, I think that for me personally, that first year of motherhood, you're kind of living under a rock, right? Which then when you pop out, you're like, oh, wait, I forgot how to be social, you know? And I think that all of us have experienced true. That now with 2020, it's like a lot of people are dealing with social anxiety. So what are your thoughts on just us kind of starting to rekindle those flourishing relationships or allyships? My new word.
I like it. I like hearing it from you. Well, you brought up like one particular, you know, kind of time frame when you first have a child and, you know, you feel pretty, you can go into kind of an isolated mode. One way I worked with that time, and I was getting coaching, you know, to do this, because I don't know if on my own, quite honestly, I would have just like hunkered in and not really like branched out. I actually had assignments to get out of the house a certain amount of times during the week.
I love that. And I just have to really just like pump that up. Like, you guys hear that? She had a coach, which I think, you know, is so new for a lot of my audience. It's really going into these new spaces with a partner, right? With that guy, with that coach, ends up making it so much easier. But okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I thank you. Cause there's times, sometimes I take it for granted, but it's not like, and that just ties to another myth, right? We're just supposed to know how to do this. We're supposed to know how to, you know, mother the best we can. And why would we think that, you know, it's we've only had one model and that's what we grew up with and maybe a little bit around us. And that's certainly going to have its, pluses and minuses. Right. So yes, having another perspective, which helped me a ton. So, you know, the getting out. So I then kind of use the fact that I had a newborn to, you know, find activities, you know, it may sound simplistic, but to me, it was like something I really had to focus on and follow through with, which is, you know, are there neighborhood mom groups? You know, where can I get together with other moms and kids? I went back to work with my first one, you know, after like 6 weeks, but I had kind of a flexible schedule. So, you know, and how do I, so then I had to be thoughtful. Not had to, I chose to, right? Like, I want to be with some moms who are staying at home with their kids. I want to be with some moms just so I could have different conversations, mm-hmm. you know, find mixes, you know, and I went to some things, like I remember going to some music classes, you know, with my daughter when, you know, under 1 year old and like, you know, this group just didn't resonate with me, you know, like and so it's like, I don't have to stay in that group. I could go to a different music class, right? Yeah. And really start allowing yourself to feel what feels right to you. That's both, you know, kind of comforting and creating security. And, you know, where is it appropriate to find groups that are maybe more challenging? You know, that would be more like, you know, a coaching group, you know, or somewhere where it's very intentional that we're going to dig into stuff and kind of disrupt things very intentionally, you know, and you can find those. I mean, those you know, I always think that it's worth the investment. Obviously, I've always invested in it, my coaching myself. But if that's not possible, you know, where can I find, you know, as close to that as possible with groups that are, you know, a little more willing to not just kind of come together and complain or, you know, kind of bring things down, but they're going to be uplifting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And it actually makes me want to dig into two things with you. I want to hear more about your personal coaching journey and just kind of your advocacy for it. But you also mentioned just like going back to work and flexible schedules, which I think is another ongoing topic, right? When it comes to women in general, it's like, do I stay home with the kids? Do I go to work? Do I work from home? I have shared regularly that it is impossible for me to really show up for myself and be a great mom if I don't have the outlet of work, right? But I also believe in building work around my life. So meaning, you know, if my kids, my family are my priority, I don't want to make what I do with them reactive based on my work life, right? So I know that, you know, when it comes to these different work environments, it is something that is different from person to person. But I think that we are kind of evolving into a space, especially after 2020, where people are being more vocal about what they want in terms of a work environment. We've now seen we can work from home, you know, we can be more efficient. A lot of companies are now only allowing, I mean, and requiring people to work 4 days a week instead of five. So talk to me a little bit about just like your narrative around like working moms and like where we are in our current landscape.
Yeah, I know it's such a so many places to go with that, right, Alina? But as you started that question, one of the things that really came to mind to me was around navigating the choices that we have, right? So on the one hand, you know, it looks like we have so many more choices as women, you know, but at the same time, those choices can be very limited based on our resources, based on, you know, like the, I don't really have, I supposedly could stay home, but that would have a huge impact on our income and, you know, the lifestyle. So, and then how supportive is my work environment going to be and all that, right? So that's a whole arena of advocacy and that, you know, we're on the journey of as women. But as far as just even what our personal choice is, like what do I want? Right. And in both my coaching journey, and I'm very engaged in this as we speak, is, you know, always looking as a woman, like to uncover and awaken my yearnings, you know, my desires. Like you said, you know, work is very fulfilling to me. That's a, you know, having, you know, seen what you do, I see a very strong yearning to make a difference, you know, a yearning to, you know, to connect, you know, with yourself and other women. So that's a process in itself to connect to those yearnings and not just be pulled by what is, you know, what did my family programming tell me I should be doing? You know, what is my mom or mother-in-law like putting, you know, in my ear, other family members, friends, you know, and then the culture, right? Like different, you know, myths and kind of beliefs our culture has and judgments around women who stay at home, women who work, you know, all of it, right? So learning to navigate that is a whole internal journey in ourself of knowing ourselves and reawakening these yearnings. And then the other piece I always like to kind of bring to light for women I'm coaching or just in the conversation, in this conversation is, you know, what we think we know or hear about, like that one is better than the other for our kids, you know, that there's a right way. And right. I think that whole like right way to make any choice in our mothering career is like one of the biggest disempowering, you know, questions that anybody's going to stand up and say there's a right way. Like the right way is what resonates with me. But then I like to add to that, you know, if you want to look at like a certain amount of the right way, there was, Galinsky, I forget her first name, Ellen, anyway, last name I know is Galinsky, has done like a ton of research and has, you know, worked in this like family arena very much. And she did studies with children around how they felt about their mom who works or their mom who doesn't work or somewhere in everything in between. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hoping to find some answers about like, you know, what was working according to the children. And I don't know, I'll see what you think about this answer, but what came to light through her studies were it didn't matter, right? Mm-hmm. It didn't matter which of those paradigms they chose or which of those paths they chose. What mattered most to the kids was, I'm going to rephrase this, but it was kind of like how their mom went about it, right? Like mm-hmm. with whatever choice they made, the thing that probably upset the kids most was like how stressed out was mom, you know, how happy, unhappy. I don't know if they use those words, but how were they dealing with their anxiety mm-hmm. of the choices they were making? So that's something we can work on, you know, and come to terms with. But I thought it was really great to know, like, there's no like right answer, right? Mm-hmm. There's no, and, you know, making that work and being, you know, the best mom we could be is learning to, as you know, you're advocating and we are, like, which I think is the real mothering of ourselves, right? The tending to ourselves. How are we taking care of ourselves is what the kids are commenting on and what they see and what they want, you know, what we can model for them.
Right. It kind of reminds me of, you know, that saying where it's like, you know, you may not remember what someone did, but you'll remember how they made you feel. And when you think about children, and I can even think of my own family dynamic, it's definitely, you know, how did mommy make me feel when we talked about this? You know, if it was disciplining or just learning or reading, like, did I feel like she was present? You know, was she rushing me? Did she have patience with me? And those are the things that even for my own conscience, it's like, I want to be able to slow down enough where if I am in this space of working with my child, that I'm not thinking about 10 other things, right? Because that's what then increases my anxiety or makes it where I'm kind of multitasking. And that I think they know that. Like even my 2-year-old,
they do.
There have been times where he's just trying to show me something and he may notice that I'm looking at my phone and he will literally slap my phone out of my hand. Which I think is hilarious to me because I'm like, wow, at 2, he already knows that this device is taking attention away from him, you know? And I think that I actually became more aware of that when I would just kind of say, so my oldest son has dyslexia, which he just got that formal diagnosis in December. And that's really more so because they can't diagnose you until you're 6. But prior to that, it was just kind of like, you know, learning differences. So with Parker having these additional layers required of him as a child, it was early on in motherhood that I realized that there was going to be a certain level of attention that I had to give this space. And it couldn't be done trying to do a million things. And so I do think that it allowed me to be very mindful early on. You know, like I think that when kids are just like infants or babies, they're kind of just like hooked onto your lifestyle or whatever you're doing. But, you know, as they develop and start going to school, it really, the paradigm like shifts because it's kind of like, okay, what do they need? Based on that, how can I then create something that's a great space for them, a great space for me? And I do think that work is probably the number one thing that gets impacted because depending on your child, you may have to dedicate more hours to them. I know for me, it was really therapy, right? So I was having to go to occupational therapy twice a week, speech therapy twice a week. And that was just with one kid, you know? And now I have four children under the age of 6. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just like,
God bless you. That's all I can say.
I never knew these things before I was a mom. Like, I never knew, oh, your kid may not come out where he can just go to school and, you know, be normal, right? Neurotypical. Mm-hmm. And now that I have this situation where, you know, I have to be so mindful of the way that I say things and the tone, and it's just a lot, right? But I think that going back to what you said, yearning, I love that, because I'm always telling my clients, let's start with what you value. But I feel like yearning is more emotional. Like, what do I yearn for in this season? You know, and I think that the last 4 or 5 years, I really yearned to create a life where I can be mindful enough with my children to know their needs. But the realization that I had was my ability to be mindful with them and slow down really started with myself, right? Like, if I'm just not getting the coaching that I need, the therapy that I need, the rest that I need, it's nearly impossible for me to show up for them. And so enough about me, but I think that that is just such a huge part of deciding what we do in terms of work, how we live, all of those dynamics. It's just like, what do I yearn for? And based on that, what are the inputs that have to happen for me to show up as that person? So I think that's great. So that. Then from your point of view, just based on kind of, how old are your children?
Well, they are 20, almost 25 and 22.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you are really good.
I'm in a whole new season.
Yes. You are really deep. You are really deep in this. You've gone through the teenage years, the toddler years, and you're probably listening to me like, girl, you haven't seen nothing yet.
No, it's all, I mean, it, you know, every phase has its thing, right?
Like, yeah.
There's for sure. Yeah, my daughter just got engaged, so I'm looking at like, what does it mean to be a mother of the bride? And how do I do that consciously? How am I going to like learn and grow through that? You know, and it's, and just be with all the feelings that come up with that, her, you know, making that step.
Yeah. So in the spirit of being transparent, like we talked about at the beginning of the episode around like knowing, you know, what to kind of, not to say look forward to, because everybody's journey will be different, but with you being in this space for over 2 decades, what do you feel like looking back have been some of the decisions that have really impacted how you show up for yourself?
Yeah. You know, there's always just kind of a flood with that one, right? Because there's like, where am I like proud, you know, slash like feel like I did that well. And then there's, you know, in full transparency, like some that I didn't. So I'll give one example. You know, when my daughters were, you know, toddlers up through like, you know, young, you know, I was very much a, you know, really working to be like as conscious and mindful as I could, and realize that, you know, I'm there, you know, not as their friend, you know, I'm there to like, you know, nurture, you know, provide for them so they could become, you know, independent beings. So I'm not their friend. They don't have to like me. And, you know, I'm going to make choices about how, you know, I discipline them. And so I was very big into like logical consequences and choices and, you know, going for my satisfaction, and being just totally fine when they, you know, didn't get their way, or, you know, they had a consequence of some sort for a choice they've made, and they would, you know, have a tantrum about it or be upset or act like they didn't care. And I got a lot of, this is uncomfortable for me, but I'm doing my job. You know, I feel pretty good about this. And, I like, you know, kind of providing these boundaries for them. You know, they knew what they could and couldn't do. And then they became teenagers. Right. And, I'm aware now that because when I and I think I was, and when they were younger, I was also like allowing myself to, I was giving myself more like leeway to be with the feelings that came up and take care of myself. Then they became teenagers and suddenly I did start caring what they thought, you know, mm-hmm. and it wasn't like I wanted to be like the super mom friend. Mm-hmm. But I also, didn't want them not to like me, you know, mm-hmm. and I really struggled during that time of, you know, providing really clear, you know, boundaries. This is, you know, zero tolerance for this, but you know, here we have some wiggle room and all of this. My husband kind of stepped in and held those spaces way more than I did, but really it wasn't so much like, you know, anything terrible happened with them. Mm-hmm. I can just now look back on it and kind of regret, like, I feel like I got really like lost in my parenting at that, during that phase, like mm-hmm. I lost myself in them. And you know, knew that it wasn't like feeling right, but didn't do anything about it. But also probably the biggest thing is I knew that a lot of stuff was getting stirred up, like from my teen years, you know, and history as they were going through it and watching them go through it. And I probably mostly regret not taking advantage of that for my growth and development. Right. So okay. that as they were like, you know, dating, being with boys, like, you know, going up against like now these like, you know, felt like much kind of bigger decisions that could have life consequences to them, right? Like uh-huh. that you don't like to think about when they're little, like sex and
right
drinking and, you know, and all that yeah. stuff. It was like, oh, you know, like kind of wanted to hide under a rock with it. But I struggled during those times. So, you know, mm-hmm. I've actually like since then kind of brought some of those to light in my own coaching and work, because I know that I left that on the table. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I could say more about that or like, but does that kind of
get no, I definitely think that that's a great example of just kind of almost, I think of it just like evolving in the role, right? Like some things we just mm-hmm. kind of will be like, okay, I did that and I read all the books and I made the choices. And then you're like, but I still have to make it my own, right? And kind of make these practices and the, you know, you can't do this or you can't do that, and really deciding like what works for you, but then also being in tune enough where you realize how sometimes the role as a mother is impacting you and kind of, you know, how you can adjust accordingly. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, with your coaching background, you probably deal with this a lot with your clients. And I know that even for me right now, I had a session with my coach last week, and she was like, you know, what do you want out of this season? And I told her that my biggest focus or yearning is to mm-hmm. get back to myself. Mm-hmm. I remember Aisha Curry, Steph Curry's wife. Do you follow her?
No.
Okay. So you know who Steph Curry is, though, right? The basketball player.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
So his wife, she has three little ones. And last year, or maybe the year before, I think it was last year, she lost all of this weight. Right. And everyone was like, oh, she probably had surgery and she's making it seem like, you know, she did it the natural way. But she basically was like, I have been raising children and breastfeeding for the last 7 years. And I really just never had time to take care of myself. And now that my children are all, you know, 2-3 years and older, I'm finally getting back to eating healthy and working out and just showing up for myself, making that time for myself. And I feel like that's kind of where I am. And I'm obviously not fully there yet because I'm still nursing and, you know, my youngest is only about to be 8 months, but mentally I'm preparing myself for getting back to me and understanding right now what is important to me. What do I want to do with my life? What do I want to look like? How do I want to dress? You know, just like the things that I didn't have time to think about for, it seems like forever. So yeah. In your coaching methodology or kind of working with women, what are some of the things that you're coaching women on right now, especially when they're trying to mother themselves?
Yeah. Well, all the things that you talked about, Alina, are important, right? Like the how do I get back to some mm-hmm. semblance of like the, you know, the who I was before I gave birth to children, right? Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I do is have women, you know, look at, you know, what of that time do you want to bring forward and what don't you, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't want to assume. This is kind of like the COVID conversation, right? Like we had our life before COVID, then COVID was thrust upon us. And mm-hmm. there's some things that I would say a lot of people would say they have liked about, you know, it and don't mm-hmm. want to go back to exactly how it is. So, you know, allowing ourselves to have that conversation. And then if it's, you know, get my body back and all that. But I would say, you know, even in those conversations, you know, I because I know you resonated with this, like, you know, having so many of them center around our yearnings, right? And like, mm-hmm. what am I yearning for? What do I need for my nourishment? And one thing that I think we all, no matter how much work we've done, can, you know, it's kind of an endless journey in a good way around our emotional facility, right? Around mm-hmm. our emotional intelligence, as it's, mm-hmm. you know, probably most commonly thought of, but how in touch with, you know, I coach around five primary emotions: fear, hurt, anger, sadness, and joy. And usually, you know, when I introduce that, and you might have this reaction, it's like, wait, why is there only one good one? what do you mean? But they're all good, you know, and they all have their function and they're a physiological, like natural part of us. And mm-hmm. I think one of the keenest way we can tend to ourselves is because we've all been shut off for them, so, you know, all of them to some degree, some of them more than others. And when we can reawaken and bring ourselves back in touch with those, naming them and then feeling them like putting them out there and then feeling them fully ourselves and then feeling them in relationship with others. Mm-hmm. I have found if there's like one thing, you know, that is like core to then all those other choices and decisions as we make them, because we're going to have those feelings during the process of, you know, our kind of reemergence, mm-hmm. you know, and just the feelings that come with, like, you know, how my body is right now. Like I've had tons of feelings of my COVID body, you know, that I created, mm-hmm. you know, and now I'm living with, but I figure it's there for me to be with and have feelings about. So, you know, getting us, and then that's something I can share with my children, you know, as I go on that journey of, you know, really deeply getting in touch and in contact with, you know, my emotional being, then I can, you know, share how to do that and have more opening for my kids to have their, you know, emotions responsibly. So mm-hmm. I think that,
and how do you know, do that? Like when you start kind of experiencing, you know, these journeys or emotions, how do you then ignite the conversation with your children, your daughters?
No, that's a great question, because we, you know, my husband and I had been, you know, doing coaching and work on ourselves to get some, our own, you know, reconnection with them ourselves. But mm-hmm. knowing that, you know, there's always, and still is more to go, when we bringing our kids into it, we, you know, we made a game of it. You know, one of the things that became kind of a staple in our, you know, I can't say we did this every night, you know, of their lives, but, you know, a fair amount. And even before they could verbalize them, my husband and I would do this and we'd play the feelings game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so those five emotions, and we do it now, my husband and I, like our kids aren't even, you know, here. It's just, it's a way that we can connect. But what we do is we, usually at a meal, but at some time, you know, toward the end of the day, we each take a turn going through those five emotions: fear, hurt, anger, sadness, joy, and sharing somewhere where I felt that feeling in my day, You know, where was the place today I had some fear? You know, where was I hurt? You know, where did I get angry? And where was I sad? And where did I feel joy? And it's such a richer way to, like, you know, bring us together. And it gets mm-hmm. us talking and acclimating to that vocabulary and mm-hmm. making the connection, because we're having them all the time, like all day to varying degrees, you know, and sometimes, you know, they, and I can't say they were always, you know, it was one of those things that I stuck with, even though they'd be like, oh, you know, like the mm-hmm. feelings game. All right. Yeah. You know, we were always happy. Like nobody complained, like once we were doing it, but you know, it wasn't always super well received. But I'll tell you now at the other end, even when they got to high school and then college, like, and now outside, like they see the difference, you know, they are really aware of the impact it had on them and even have written papers about it. And I hated mm-hmm. that game, but you know,
yeah, so I mean, that's incredible.
It was nice to get a little bit of a reward later of that, right. But I definitely didn't get it during.
Yeah. And you think about just how much, even probably during most people's childhood, they don't know how to give feelings, you know, a word. And I think that that has been something that's been valuable to our family, having a quote unquote special needs child, is that it is so much work done around feelings for them in school that it, then you have to kind of adapt it or adapt to it a similar model in your home. But, you know, if I think about me growing up, it's kind of like I felt how I felt, but there was no real space for me to share that, exactly. You know, and I definitely wasn't aware of how my parents felt like throughout their day, you know, and my son Parker, he's always like, so mom, how was your day? You know, and it's so interesting because he's so in tune with emotions of all people, more than most, which is common, but being able to have to tell him how I feel is something that I never really experienced growing up. And sometimes I'm like, do I tell him how I really feel, or do I just kind of sugarcoat it? So I really love that game. I think that that's great. And it reminds me of, it reminds me of just during COVID, one of the things that my children's school was really good about was, when they felt like the children were just experiencing extreme emotion or just off from their normal selves, they would bring it home through the school counselor. So she would, you know, just kind of keep us up to date on what's going on. And the school was pretty small, so she knew both of our kids who were school age. And, you know, I obviously have been in coaching environments for a while now, but it was the first time that both me, my husband, and my husband were in environments where we were receiving direct feedback on how to coach our children, as well as receiving coaching for parenting. And it was the most invaluable thing. Like, I loved it so much, because I think that as a parent, you are so in the weeds of trying to figure out little things, what's for dinner, you know, and then having to figure out, you know, what emotions are being evoked today from four children and what's the right script and all of these things. It's so much, right? But I think the simple game like that, to me, brings a lot of what we talked about in those sessions. And I heard you mention that you and your husband were coached on, you know, it sounded like parenting. Was that what you were saying, on interacting with your children?
We had a whole, you know, we started our relationship with premarital coaching. So we've always always kept couples coaching, you know, but then we've also done specific, like, the organization that I'm a part of, the Wright Foundation, does parent-child weekends, you know, so that's where we'd all kind of come together as a family and work on this. I'm now trained in, but we also participated in family systems coaching, where the whole family gets together and identifies roles, you know, talks about these things and, you know, kind of creates that atmosphere together. Cause you know, that's the whole thing, right? How we're all connected. So even if, you know, we're not saying certain things, it's being felt, you know, and so how do we bring those things more to the forefront and create an environment where we can, and I'm going to underline responsibly have our emotions, you know, too, mm-hmm. Alina, because so many of us don't have them now, or they're so, you know, buried because maybe we grew up in an environment where, you know, anger was put out irresponsibly, right? Or, you know, even like, you know, mental health issues weren't dealt with in a way that we saw that, you know, strong emotions or having emotions could in any way be a good thing, right? Mm-hmm. You know, to varying degrees, right? But we all, you know, have a lot of that wired in us. So learning to have them responsibly, you know, with each other, with ourselves and with each other is kind of the key thing I want to also underline with this emotion conversation.
Right, right. Yeah. So for those who are listening, who are kind of, I think that anytime I listen to, especially parenting, motherhood podcasts, I'm always walking away a little bit anxious and overwhelmed because I'm like, oh, this is what I need to be doing. Or, oh, I need to go read more on like parenting and counseling and coaching. But for those listening who may be new, or maybe they already have like their toe in the door with just like coaching on these different concepts, how can they either work with you or learn more about kind of the facilities that you offer, and just kind of what that journey would be like?
Yeah. Well, two questions. So, kind of naming some of what the journey is like. I mean, yeah, I think you're asking both, like, how mm-hmm. do they get in touch with me and what would that look like? Is mm-hmm. that what you're saying?
Yeah. And just like okay. what to do with all of this information, like, cause yes, I just want people to really, you know, feel like, okay, this right. is the first step that I can take after this episode.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, first naming, you know, that just like you, you know, I have ways that I coach one-on-one, you know, group coaching and other things through the organization I'm involved with at the Wright Foundation. But, you know, you can find me on Instagram at Dr. Gertrude Lyons or my website, drgertrudelyons.com. But then, you know, as far as like, whoa, like what's, so then I'll say, you know, what's something like a small step I could take out of like hearing all this, you know, and mm-hmm. one is to just, you know, listen to this from a space of like, all is well, you know, if you're listening to this, you're already doing a good job because you care, right? And mm-hmm. you're looking to develop yourself or do, you know, a good job as a mom, you know, and I think that goes a long way. I tell moms like, and you know, people I coach, but you know, moms in particular, that this isn't about you figuring it out and like getting perfect, you know, this is about yeah. them again, seeing you on your journey and knowing that you're working to, you know, broaden, enlighten, you know, challenge yourself, do difficult things. And they mm-hmm. see that and they know that you're working on it versus like, oh, sorry, this is just how I am and deal with it, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think having that compassion and grace and, you know, already just, you know, honoring the job that we are doing, you know, and that you are doing in this moment. And then like, oh, so what's a small step I could take out of, I just listened to this podcast. We covered, you know, a lot of arenas, you know, but I think if I were to pick one, you know, if there's a step I could take, I named those five emotions, right? Fear, hurt, anger, sadness, joy, just for myself. If I start, mm-hmm. you know, noticing those, you know, in myself and others, if I checked in with myself one time a day or a few times a week on, you know, can I identify where I felt those feelings today and just get myself, you know, and then if I already have that, you know, kind of down, like, where can I be sharing those feelings more? You know, there's, mm-hmm. or, you know, how can I be expressing them more deeply for myself so I can take advantage of this emotional landscape? So, you know, depending on where you're at in that arena, you know, to take some step in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just kind of slowing down enough to experience them and ultimately letting, you know, your intuition guide you on like, okay, now that I have named this, where do I feel like I have the most need? I love that.
Oh, let me say one other thing, Alina, you said that I always like to like, cause when we get into this, like being in our emotions, like a lot of times what comes up for women is like, yeah, but what am I supposed to do? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. Okay, that's all nice. It's like, I'm feeling, right. But like, what do I do? And I do like to like at least name, even though that's a hard belief to shift or break, is like, you are doing something by feeling your feelings. You know, you're clearing a space, you're creating a space, you're taking care of yourself. And that is a doing, even though it's very right brain being, it still also classifies as a doing. So you can feel right. You did something.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Cause it's kind of like, you don't feel like you're actually taking action unless you're like moving it from brain to paper or whatever.
Exactly.
I love that. Exactly. That's a good tip. And along the line of tips, one of the things that I really focus on within my practice is really helping women to create harmony between work and home, right? So really just demystifying this whole work-life balance. Like, what is that? If I don't feel balanced, am I doing it wrong? And I think that it ultimately comes down to just having, like you said, an understanding of values and needs and allowing us to really align our productivity and our choices up with what we value most. So yeah, based on, you know, your own life, right? Being a working mom and, you know, having a business and all of the things, what do you feel like are some tips that you could leave us with for creating harmony between work and home?
Between work and home. Yeah. Let's see, like one of the things that I think ties to like where we've been, you know, already in our conversation today, because it ties in like, you know, the emotional aspect. And when I talked about, I think those transitions, you know, that's something I work on a lot with women is, you know, when we're, and if you work at home, you know, those transition aren't always as explicit as when, you know, days maybe we're at an office or we go outside the home and then transition back is, you know, how, when I'm making a transition from a workspace into a, being with my family space, you know, I think like giving my, doing kind of a check, like, am I, what kind of emotional state am I in right now? Am I like, you know, if I like shut the door and now I'm going to go be with my kids, am I like super ramped up or anxious or did something just happen? Mm-hmm. You know, what happened in my day that, and you know, what kind of like mental clearing can I do by naming, you know, what feelings I'm having about some things that went on, you know, so that I can then, you know, be as present as possible when I make that transition. You know, that I think is just being aware that transitions are triggering, and as much as we can take care of ourselves in those, which then I would say kind of in parallel with that, it can be really tricky, you know, when you're working from home or, you know, those boundaries can blur so much is that we have to create those boundaries and that, you know, sometimes we think it's like the quantity of time versus the quality of time. I mean, both have their value, but as you said earlier, you know, how can I be present and create that quality time? That doesn't have to be a lot. So I would set up kind of daily and then a little bit longer, but like each of my daughters would know that I would have 15 minutes with them of my undivided attention a day. Okay. It could be 5 minutes, you know? And then it doesn't have to be weekly. I mean, you have four children. That's a lot, you know, you got to do what works for you, but some semblance of a bit of a system or schedule where, and I find that it relieves everybody's tension. I know I'm going to get, you know, my own like 5-10 minutes with mom, you know, and I'm then going to be fully present in those 10 minutes, you know, and sometimes I'm going to choose what we do in that period of time. And sometimes they get full choice, you know, and I empower them with what it is. And then every now and then, you know, some rhythm where you have like an hour or, you know, some longer times with each of them, I think, you know, really helps give everybody a little more security and safety and, you know, creates those boundaries that really help us.
Yeah. I love that. My children would probably be obsessed with it, especially my daughter. She loves just girl time. But I think that it kind of goes with the concept of time blocking, where it's like, okay, you can relieve some of your anxiety around certain projects because you know, okay, I have a dedicated time to record podcasts or to do this. And it's like, okay, I know that I have dedicated time to catch up on what's going on with each child, or even your spouse or your mother or whoever, you know?
I'd like to you know, hierarchy that where it's like you give it to yourself first and foremost, then your partner, spouse, and then your kids. You know, we oftentimes have that one. I mean, in as far as people connection, you know, work is in there also, but you know, that those tending to those in that order, you know, you as the core, you know, if you think of a tree, like you core, you're solid, that center of the tree is like, is, you know, strong and solid as possible. And then that next core, your relationship, and then, you know, the healthier and more capacity for growth you have with your children, you know, but if that core isn't, if that's not taken care of, it's not in good shape. Like the tree, well, you know, isn't steady, a strong wind comes and like, you know, not to be dramatic, but it, you know,
no, seriously,
think of it that way. It's kind of like,
No, I always tell people have like, I always like to identify your top three. And like, for me right now, like it's my mental health, my family, and my work. And people are like, oh, I'm so shocked to hear that, like, you know, mental health is a thing for you. And I labeled it that way because even beyond just like physical health, even though I know that they go hand in hand, I realize if like I don't have the environment or the tools or the coaching or space to sleep, read, do whatever to like make myself feel well, then it doesn't matter. Like everything else will fall apart, you know, because I won't even get out of bed, you know? And it's just like you said, the wind will come. And if I am not in that place where I've given myself all of the things that I need, it's just a broken home.
So,
well, wonderful. Well, I loved this conversation. I am so appreciative of you coming on, and we will definitely link all of your social handles and your website in the show notes so that our listeners can really just connect with you. And I think that there's so many opportunities for people to find coaches out there because a lot of us need them right now. So thank you again.
It's been such a pleasure, and I'm so grateful to be with you, Alina, and had the chance to meet and get to know you. And I, you know, resonate with so much with everything that you're doing, and just love it.
Wonderful. All right. Talk soon. Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of The Reminder Remedy. Be sure to visit us at thereminderremedy.com for all of our latest information on our workshops, our freebies, and how you can stay in touch with us.